Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, our mission is really laser-focused. We're mapping the shifting investment landscape and the huge growth potential in Southeast Asia's digital economy. We'll be zeroing in specifically on e-commerce using the big GTB Economy 2025 Master Deck as our guide.
Yeah, and it's a really critical look for anyone watching global investments because the scale here is just, well, enormous. The region's moving fast. It's going beyond the digital decade, as they called it, and straight into what they're terming the AI reality.
AI reality.
We're seeing the Southeast Asian digital economy that's ASEAN, pronounced ASEAN, likely to blow past $300 billion in GMV, gross merchandise value, in 2025.
$300 billion.
And what's really compelling is that this path, this trajectory, it's 1.5 times higher than what people were forecasting just a decade ago.
Okay, let's unpack that a bit. So the whole conversation has basically changed, hasn't it? We're moving past that old, you know, growth at all costs mantra. So the essential takeaway for you, the investor listening in, is that this growth seems sustained and it's becoming profitable.
That's the core message. Yeah. We're seeing GMV and revenue holding these like healthy double-digit growth rates around 15% year over year.
Okay.
And this stability, it's projected to push total revenue up to $135 billion.
Which is, what was the figure? An 11.2 times increase in just 10 years.
Exactly. An incredible jump. The maturity curve is definitely steepening.
Right.
And that brings us neatly to the new investment climate in ASEAN. In ASEAN. Money's flowing again, but it's much more targeted.
Okay, so private funding is maybe stabilizing, but it's nothing like those, well, wild levels we saw back in the bubble era.
Oh, far from it. Private funding is still like 70% below the 2021 highs. But we have seen a cautious, you know, noticeable uptick, about 15% in the last year, bringing the total to $7.7 billion.
Okay, $7.7 billion. But the critical thing you're saying is where that money's going.
Precisely. It's narrowed dramatically. It really reflects a kind of flight to quality, to safety.
And that concentration, the sources show, it's heavily tilted towards, well, maturity. Late stage deals.
Absolutely. Series C, D, E, and beyond. They're now accounting for about 80% of all the funding. That's up from around 70% before.
80%. Yeah. So what does that signal for the, you know, the earlier stage startup ecosystem?
It means that window for the really unproven, high burn, maybe high risk ideas, it's fundamentally closed for now. Capital is flowing towards proven monetization models.
And the sector getting the biggest piece of that pie.
Digital financial services, DFS.
Right. DFS is capturing, what, 45 to 50% of total deal value?
Yeah.
That's a huge jump from around 30% previously.
It is. It's a massive jump.
So why DFS? Why is that the darling for these late stage investors right now?
Well, it reflects this huge durable opportunity, right? Capturing non-cash transactions across a population that was largely underserved, previously unbanked in many parts of the region. DFS platforms, they tend to offer higher margin transactions, and they're often embedded really deep within existing digital ecosystems. It's just a clearer path to viability.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, the sources highlight four key factors that are supposedly rekindling investor interest, building confidence. What are those?
Yeah, they all really point towards stability and predictability. First, as you'd expect, realistic entry valuations. The froth is gone. Prices have settled down to more sustainable levels.
Okay.
Second, proven monetization models. We touched on this, but revenue growth is actually keeping pace with GMV growth now. Business models are working.
And the third one is, well, it seems like the most striking data point in the whole deck, really. The clear path to profitability.
It's pretty remarkable.
80% of early stage investors they surveyed said the majority of their portfolio companies are either profitable now or expected to be within 12 months.
80%. Yeah, that's a huge operational shift.
It really is. And the last factor.
It's the visibility of dependable exit pathways. You know, IPOs.
Yeah.
Now, the region did trail global markets in IPO volume in the first half of 2025. But there's apparently a really robust pipeline. Over 150 candidates waiting across Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore.
Okay, that profitability metric is fantastic news, obviously. But doesn't it maybe raise a slight flag? If investors are demanding profitability so quickly, is there a risk that companies might be, you know, cutting back too much, maybe on R&D or long-term expansion, just to hit that short-term mark?
That's exactly the tension in the market right now. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The pressure to show viability is just paramount. And while, yes, it brings discipline, it certainly could limit some of those big, risky bets on future innovation, which, you know, loops back to why so much capital is clustering in those mature deals. The market's really focused on execution over, let's say, blue sky expansion.
Right. Execution now. Okay, so we've established investors want profitability, maturity, that's great for established firms. But does that stability mean?
Yeah.
Are consumers still innovating? Is the region just growing by consolidation? Or is there a real shift in how people are buying things? Let's switch focus now to the core of this deep dive. E-commerce. It's bounced back strongly, right? $185 billion GMV across ASEAN 10.
Yeah, e-commerce is not just resurgent. It's also consolidating pretty rapidly. Fewer, bigger regional players. But the biggest disruptive shift, the one really defining things right now, is the massive rise of video commerce.
Video commerce. This is where it gets really interesting, I think. It's projected to grab, what, 25% of total e-commerce GMV by 2025?
A quarter of the market, yeah.
That speed of adoption is just incredible. It must be fundamentally shifting the competitive landscape. Less than 5% in 2022, now heading for 25% in just 3 years.
It's explosive growth, and we really need to be clear about how it's growing, because it's purely a story of volume over value.
Exactly. The source material hammers this point home. The growth is powered by a 50% year-over-year surge in the number of transactions.
Right.
Not higher prices.
Not at all.
And this huge volume of low-cost, high-frequency purchases, it's actually pulling down the overall average order value, the AOV, across the whole e-commerce sector.
That's right. The difference in price is stark. Video commerce transactions, they average only about $6 to $7 per order.
$6 to $7.
Compare that to the overall e-commerce AOV, which is sitting around $11 to $13.
Right.
And this shift, it's really rooted in what they call shoppertainment. Consumers making impulse buys, trusting recommendations from local creators, often in a live interactive setting.
I have to pause you there, though. If the average order is only half the standard market rate, $6 or $7,
yeah.
How on earth are the logistics costs and platform commissions covered? Is this actually sustainable? Or is it still kind of a subsidized play by the platforms just to grab market share? Because handling fulfillment for tons of tiny, low-value items sounds like a nightmare.
That is the core challenge. You've hit it, exactly. The insight here is that the sheer volume demands absolutely massive, hyper-efficient platform infrastructure. Fulfillment, inventory, super cheap, last-mile delivery. The platforms seem to be prioritizing market dominance through this volume, basically betting that scale will eventually crush the logistics cost per unit.
A big bet on scale, then.
And the trust factor, particularly in the creator economy, is crucial for unlocking that volume needed to make the model work.
Right, the creator economy. That feeds directly into this. And it's not just the megastars anymore, is it?
No, precisely. The market's diversifying. You see niche creators, micro-influencers becoming really important because trust is the absolute foundational currency here. Consumers want what feels like an authentic recommendation.
And the impact is huge.
Immense. Get this. The top 1,000 products in each country drive 25% of that country's total GMV.
Wow. A quarter of the GMV from just 1,000 products.
Yeah. And success is totally linked to the live format. 80% of those top performing products were featured in live streams.
80%. Okay. So what kind of things are selling best in this, you know, visual, impulsive environment?
Well, beauty and fashion dominate, as you might expect. They're about 21% and 27% of video GMV, respectively. The live demo format is just perfect for cosmetics, clothes, trying things on virtually, or seeing them in action. But we're also seeing everyday staples really expanding their footprint. Things like home and tools are at 10%. Groceries are growing, too. Video commerce is basically becoming the go-to marketplace for almost everything.
Okay, all right. Let's pivot now. We've talked about the present volume boom. Let's look at the next phase, the next big investment theme. The AI transformation. AI isn't just back-end stuff anymore, right? It's becoming part of the actual shopping journey.
Very much so.
The data says 62% of consumers report that AI features, like hyper-personalized recommendations, have already influenced what they buy.
Yeah, and this is a major, major focus for investors now. It's arguably the brightest spot in private funding. Southeast Asia has around 700 active AI startups currently.
700.
And critically, over 30% of all private funding in the last 12 months went directly into AI-related investments. It's a real conviction play on the future.
Okay, 30%. So VCs are clearly backing AI heavily, but what does that actually translate to for businesses right now? It seems like the immediate benefits are maybe less about huge new revenue streams and more about, well, efficiency.
That's the crucial insight from the data, yes. Right now, AI in ASEAN is primarily an optimization tool. It's not yet a massive growth engine. The most immediate tangible benefit is cost savings. 64% of investor portfolios reported significant cost savings from using AI.
Okay, nearly two-thirds seeing cost savings.
But in contrast, only 29% have actually achieved higher revenue growth through AI, and just 14% were able to command higher prices for what they sell.
So it's more defensive AI spending focused on efficiency rather than aggressive market-grabbing AI spending at this point.
Exactly. The low-hanging fruit is definitely operational efficiency. But there's a hurdle. There's a trust challenge that needs to be overcome to unlock the full commercial potential of AI.
How so?
Well, while consumers seem pretty enthusiastic about using AI for, you know, daily conveniences, recommendations, planning, they're still quite cautious about delegating really significant decisions, things involving money, privacy, data security. Those concerns are real.
Right. And that caution, that hesitation, it means realizing those futuristic concepts like agentic transactions, that's still a way off. You know, where an AI agent, a bot, could just seamlessly handle a complex purchase across multiple sites without you constantly checking.
Precisely. That's still largely an untapped opportunity. Think about asking an agent to, say, find the best flight and hotel deal for a weekend trip to Bangkok and just book it. That requires delegating real financial trust.
Yeah, absolutely.
And until that confidence is really built, probably through a lot of transparency and giving users control, consumers will likely remain the final gatekeeper. And that slows down the full commercialization of that kind of agentic AI.
Okay, let's try and bring this all together for the investor listening. Looking at everything we've discussed, what stands out to you as the two biggest, most important dynamics defining the CFI market right now?
Okay, two key things. First, it's this powerful validation of maturity. The entire ASEAN digital economy is proving it can be profitable. We saw that with the 80% profitability metric, the strong IPO pipeline. That's huge validation.
Okay, maturity validated.
The second dynamic is really a twin engine of acceleration. On one hand, you've got that explosive volume-driven growth in consumer commerce, thanks mainly to the video boom. And coupled with that, you have AI emerging as the dominant new investment theme, driving efficiency now and holding massive future potential.
It really has been a phenomenal decade of transformation, hasn't it? The digital economy has already grown, what, 7.4 times in GMV over 10 years, overcoming big hurdles like the cash is king mindset, infrastructure gaps.
Huge progress.
Looking ahead now, the source material seems to suggest that future market leadership is going to be defined by a balance between two powerful, maybe even conflicting forces.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. You've got the AI acceleration on one side, this powerful force for innovation, potentially unifying systems. And then on the other side, you have the wild card of regulatory choices. How will regulations evolve across what is still a pretty fragmented region? So the provocative thought to leave listeners with is maybe this. Which of these forces will ultimately win out? Will it be the sheer velocity of innovation driven by AI? Or will the complexity of regulatory fragmentation across different countries be the decisive factor in unlocking or maybe limiting Southeast Asia's huge future potential?
Innovation velocity versus regulatory friction. That's a fascinating tension to end on. Got consumers pulling for AI, this massive volume-driven commerce, reshaping e-commerce, investors demanding clear profitability, all bumping up against a complex regulatory landscape. Lots to think about there. We definitely invite you, the listener, to explore the implications of this volume-driven world and the rapid AI adoption in the region further.